Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavahitamastu Mavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Yeah, it's interesting, is that all other, you know, areas of the world, they have a culture that goes back in time, you know, so then they have, you know, for their own identity, there is a, what would you say, some tradition or some restrictions to maintain that identity. Like that. But, you know, how you say, the one country in discussion, then it's a place where there was, that means, individuals came there, there was nothing, it was not theirs. And then basically they just made it theirs by, you know, taking over everything. You know, does that make sense? Well, everybody else is like, let's say Alexander was the, you know, emperor of the world at the time, but there was already Macedonia, and then he went expanded beyond that. So he had a seat, or, you know, the French kings, or the Romans, or, you know, everybody had their spot. But here's people that didn't have any place. They were actually, you know, homeless. And then they came there and just took over. You know, and in taking over, they used whatever methods were, you know, most, how you say, efficient. Not appropriate? No, that's not the word. Efficient. Yeah, you know? Does that make sense? And so because of that, then, there's that consideration of, they can poke the nose into any situation anywhere, and it's what they do. You know, so it's, you know, everywhere else, why are you doing that? That's none of your business. It's, no, that is our business. That's what we do. You know. Yes. So like that. So because of that, then if they do make it the determination to poke the nose into everyone's business and make sure they're Krishna conscious, then it's very good, because everywhere else, oh, we can't say anything, or we have to be more careful of that. They're not. So then it's an advantage if it's Krishna conscious. And if it's not Krishna conscious, then the whole rest of the world has some phrase for them. Okay. In devotional life, one has faith in this process. Such faith is one of the six kinds of surrender. Rakshish Yatiti Vishvasa, Hari Bhakti Vilas 11.676. One of the processes of surrender is that one should simply depend on Krishna, convinced that he will give one all protection. That Krishna will protect his devotee is a fact. Ananda Maharaj and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan accepted this very simply, although they did not know that the Supreme Lord himself was present before them. There have been many instances in which a devotee like Prahlad Maharaj or Dhruva Maharaj has been put into difficulty even by his father, but has been saved under all circumstances. Therefore, our only business is to become Krishna conscious and fully dependent on Krishna for all protection. Right? So therefore, we see is that someone is in taking up this process, because the process is being practiced by these persons here, so you see that effect. But the in taking up the process, then that which is useful for Krishna consciousness is accepted. Right? That's the first point. Then the second is you give up those things that are not of value. Right? Someone can start chanting Hare Krishna even though they still are doing all kinds of things that aren't very useful. But if they just give up what's not useful and not take up Krishna consciousness or the practices, then what benefit is there other than, okay, they've increased their piety a little renunciation, but still material. That's why the first thing is to get people to chant Hare Krishna. Then, after that, then they can worry about the regulative principles. But sometimes devotees start, no, being a vegetarian is the first thing, or being a vegan is the first thing, or these kind of things. No, but it's not that, or some new agey thing is the first thing. No, it's chanting is the first thing. Then from there, everything else goes. So therefore, chanting, having a book, reading. So the guy could be reading the books or doing some chanting, still be a total nonsense, and they would still start to make progress. Then they would appreciate, in the association of devotees, that there's things to do. Therefore, you give up what's inappropriate and practice what's there. So that's the Bhajana Kriya and Nartana Kriti. Right? Then seeing Krishna as one's protector and maintainer, then you see is that that's then on the next level. But one always sees that Krishna will take care and Krishna will protect. So that's the next aspect. Then we have that identifying oneself as Krishna's devotee and being meek and humble, like that. So that's the position that these topmost devotees function at. So it includes already, they already do things favor, everything they do is to please Krishna. They don't do anything that's not. And they always see Krishna as the protector and maintainer. Right? So here, you see the Brajbasis, that they surrender to Narayana, you know, because they know he is the protector. But they surrender to him to protect Krishna. they don't see him as the source of Narayana. So he says, but when you start the process, you know, seriously, then, you know, you're going to take up. But the actual thing is the end part is what comes first. You identify as a devotee and you're meek and humble. Because of that, then you can follow the process. Give up what's not necessary, and then see Krishna as one's protector and maintainer. You follow it like that, then in practical application, it comes out, the protector and maintainer comes out as the end. You understand? But now your identity as a servant of Krishna and your meekness and humbleness is at its, you know, at its best. You understand? So that's why many times these things, they have we have the list of the six. So the first two are the focus of the Kanista, the second two are the Madhyam, the last two is the Uttama. But you have to start on that aspect of the Uttama's thing. But we'll start without that kind of realization. Only then we can take up the other processes. That's why it's said the Uttamas will function like Madhyamas. Like that. That's the... So, Nanda Maharaj and the others said, we must previously have performed austerities for a very long time, worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, performed pious activities for public life, constructing public roads and wells, and also given charity, as a result of which this boy, although faced with death, has returned to give happiness to his relatives. Right? So that's the important things. We understand what actually is important in life. We take it, yeah, the kids are supposed to be like that. But actually, no, that's only due to piety that people are healthy, everything goes on, there's good relationships, everything maintains nicely. It's only due to piety. And so in the modern, that things don't work, they think, why not? You know, is this technique that? No, it's a lack of piety, that's all. You're pious, it works. You're not pious, doesn't matter what technique you use, it won't work. Srila Prabhupada comments. Nanda Maharaj confirmed that by pious activities one can become a sadhu, so that one will be happy at home and one's children will be protected. In Shastra, there are many injunctions for karmis and jnanis, especially for karmis, by which they can become pious and happy even in material life. Why more for karmis? Right? Because what's the goal of the jnanis? Liberation. Is there any variety in it? Nothing. So how much regulation do you need? How many activities do you need to get to that point? Not so many. But on the platform of the karmi, what do they want? Right? Sense gratification. But how much variety of sense gratification is there in the universe? Right? Yeah, so that's why there's the maximum amount of rules for them. So in other words, the more That's the thing. The more sense gratification you want, the more rules are there. We're thinking, no, the less, you know. Okay, I followed Krishna. God, there's so many rules, but, you know, I'm more liberal. I'm more accommodating. I'm not so fanatic. I don't have to follow the rules. No, actually, you have to follow more rules. That's the point, is that the more it's just about Krishna and not about ourselves, in other words, it has that detached side, there's less rules. And the more it's about your own concept, the more rules are there. So that's the mode of ignorance, that people who want more freedom and more facility for themselves and more independence and sense gratification, they're the ones that most strongly say we don't have to follow the rules. But actually, that's what the rules are written for them. That's the whole point. The ones who lived in the temple and just full-time did service in the temple, the rules, there's very few rules for them. A couple of rules here and there, that's all there is for them. But you want to do your own thing, then that's where all the rules come in. Right? So, as much as you're independent from that basic position of just direct activities of devotional service, to that degree, rules are there. So if in performing your duties in household life, and one is living in the community, but you see everything connected to Krishna, then the rules are less. But as soon as it's for yourself, that's where all the rules come in. And if you're doing it for Krishna, even if there's some little bit of discrepancy, it's not so well performed, the result may come out fabulous. But if it's for yourself, if it's not perfect, you don't get a good result. That's the fun part. So that's the can't have your cake and eat it. You know, so that's the whole point. Maya, so that's how it works. You want it, you can't have it. That's how energy works. No? Yes.
Mm. The previous point is chanting, that people should chant first and then everything else follows.
Yeah.
I remember in the mid-90s there was the whole thing about they should rather chant less but be steady, then chant more and then go back.
Why not chant more and be steady? What's going to make them steady? Yeah, so then the whole point is, no, it shouldn't be that they chant more than they can do. That's just a principle of devotional service. Sadhana is according to your capacity. So they have their particular life. They add Krishna consciousness into it to that degree that they can follow it. But one has to understand they're only chanting four rounds. That's different than someone who's chanting 16. And don't try to make it the same. You know, but they're chanting with faith and these guys. But if they had that much faith that it has that quality, why aren't they chanting 16 rounds? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make sense. So therefore, there is a difference. So you take them up through it, and then they do that for a while, then they come up and that. Because you have to remember is that, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, people walked in the door and started chanting 16 rounds that moment. You know, and then there's the ones that, yeah, they took forever and all that, and they took a long time, some years, and that. But that means that just, just took longer. But the point is it can be done. So, in other words, if someone does want to chant 16 rounds and they can work it in, then why would you tell them no, only chant four? That's not important. You know, no, but it's a standard. There is no standard like that. Where's the standard? We've created it. You know what I'm saying? The standard's 16. And so therefore, if they can't do 16, then you do less. Just like the standard Akadasi is, you do all, then if you can't, you do less. But you can't. So it's what is recommended. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that yes, if someone's trying to, you know, I'll chant 64 rounds and this and that, and then they don't take care of the family, they don't do their job, everything starts to fall apart for them. Yes, you want to avoid that. But the point is that if they're able to pick it up, you let them move at the speed they do. Therefore, everybody's individual. So this idea of, no, this is the standard, everybody has to do that, that's actually coming from a more impersonal kind of thing. You can't deal with individuals. Because individuals will all be different. Therefore, you have a general standard, And then you work everybody in according to their nature. Right? So the standard is you take up devotional service as you have qualification. And so if somebody, then they can do a little bit more, then they do more. Someone can't, they do less. So in other words, the one person is chanting four and the other person is chanting one. It's the same in that they're doing their capacity. Or the temple devotee or someone else is chanting 16 reps. That's their capacity. So they are following the principle. But to say that, no, you have to be like this, then that's not going to work. Is that what's happening?
Maharaj, when you say you do devotional service according to our qualification, means it is like our piety?
Yes, you can say it's our piety. Because Krishna consciousness is the kind of piety we're cultivating. Mm-hmm. We're not cultivating material piety. Some may think that by adding material piety, then devotional service will go better. It's never happened in the past, never will. Devotional service already includes all other piety. Mm-hmm. Right? Because performing a recommended activity of Shastra, that's pious, karma. Following the knowledge and philosophy and detachment given in the scriptures, that's then the jnana piety. Right? But bhakti already includes the proper knowledge with detachment for Krishna. So it already includes. So that's the real piety. So when the scripture actually talks about piety in connection with this, it just means devotional service. It doesn't mean other. So some will say, no, but then why is it using the word piety? Because piety is a word of bhakti, not of karma and jnana. Mm-hmm. Since karma and jnana are following the activities of bhakti, without bhakti, then generally the term piety is used. Mm-hmm. Because that's all they're doing of bhakti. In other words, the devotee is getting up in the Brahma Muhurta, taking their bath and performing some, you know, recommended sadhana. So we just call it bhakti. We don't call it piety. Mm-hmm. Though it is piety. Now, the non-devotee is getting up in the Brahma Muhurta, following the taking their bath, following the recommendations of Shastra. But they're not doing it as devotion to Krishna. So all they're doing is the karma of bhakti. So we call that piety. Right? Or another person is then studying Shastra, being detached from their activities and all that, then that's what you do in bhakti. But they're not doing it with devotion. So therefore we call it jnana. You know, or that piety. But bhakti already includes piety, because that's what you express bhakti through. Right? You take so piety means what pleases Krishna. Right? On some level or another. So on Bhagavan, then he has very specific flavors. As Paramatma, then there's so much ritualistic aspect. You know, and as Brahman, then there's so much the mechanical aspect of the ritualistic aspect. But for Krishna, it's the interaction. And then that interaction, therefore, has rules, and those rules have technique. So the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis, they support the Icha Shakti. But in the material world, we remove Krishna as the Icha Shakti, we replace it with ourselves, and then the Kriya and the Jnana is for us. Right? So the Jnana, that'll be the Jnana, and the Kriya will be the Karma. So bhakti already includes it. But we tend to think we take religion, oh, there's this religion, there's that religion, there's this, or, you know, some are more strict, some are less. But no, there's either you're pleasing Krishna or you're not. Right? So in bhakti, then, it already includes. So in other words, there's activity, and you can do that to please Krishna. Right? So it's not that there's pleasing Krishna, and then there's activity. No, you use the activity to please Krishna. But you can also perform the activity not to please Krishna. Right? Knowledge you can use to please Krishna, or you can use it to not please Krishna. So it's karma and jnana, they're already part of bhakti. Does that make sense? In other words, you have to be dedicated to the scriptures, to the spiritual master, to this, even if you're just a karmi or jnani. So this elements of bhakti must be present for the paths to work. Right? Means the karmi, if he's not devoted to his spiritual master, to the teacher, to his parents, to performing his duties, because, you know, the Shastra says and all that, how is he going to get the result? So without bhakti, they don't do. But as soon as they get the result, they may stop doing the activity. Because it's for themselves, but since it's for Krishna's pleasure, the devotees will continue. Right? So that's why it's sad-dharma. These other non-devotees are performing dharma. Because they'll take it up and then they'll give it up. The devotees are practicing sad-dharma because they never give it up. They're always dealing with the nature of something in what way it will please Krishna. That's sad-dharma. Dealing with the nature of something when you want something from it, that's just dharma. And then when you get the result, you may or may not continue. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So, you know, that's what we are saying, that Nanda Maharaj and others, that they worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and because of the pious activities, they were able to save the life of Krishna. So material piety cannot save one from death, but bhakti can definitely save one from death.
Yes, it means it's just whenever you're supposed to do. You follow piety, your life is longer. You don't follow piety, your life is shorter. Like that. But here it's about devotion. They're saying it like this because they just see themselves as devotees. They just see themselves as simple devotees living in a village and performing devotional service. They're attached householders, they have all these facilities. So they'll identify themselves as neophytes. That's why the Uttama sees things and functions as a madhyama, right? Because they make the distinction to preach, but they identify themselves as a neophyte, because that's what they're doing here. So again, we're only being asked to follow the example given by them in the spiritual world.
Sad-dharma and nitya-dharma are the same.
Sad-dharma and nitya-dharma, yes. Means by our definition. Okay. According to Vedic civilization, one should perform activities for the benefit of the public, such as constructing public roads, planting trees on both sides of the road so that people can walk in the shade, and constructing public wells so that everyone can take water without difficulty. Like, I don't know if you probably, maybe you've not seen, but if you go back a couple of years, do you remember going to Calcutta? There was these huge trees. So those have been planted, who knows, 100, 200, 150, 200 years ago by somebody on both sides of the road. Those were done as a piety, right? So that you can move on the roads in the shade. That was the standard. You know, you build the road, that's a piety, so people can move nice. And then you plant trees so that people can walk without difficulty on the road. Right, so that you can see is this modern system is not pious, because the first thing you do is cut down the trees. Right?
Do they still build like this? They plant trees in some suburb areas on the both sides of the roads.
Yeah, no, so if you do that, that's a pious. So generally the municipality will look at those things. So when you do that, it's nicer. I remember in it was just some years back, maybe 10 years or something, maybe 15, I don't remember, but it was something like that. At parts of New York that it's just, you know, brick building, steps, cement sidewalk, cement street, cement sidewalk, steps, building. That's it. And then one day they decided to plant trees, you know. Which they had. Some areas had trees, but most didn't. And then they planted trees, and it's nice. Because it's a pious thing. So Krishna likes it like that. So that's the whole point. So you can tell us also how pious the community by how nicely they plant trees. So if you drive down the street, it's an old place, looks like it's falling apart, and there are no trees, it's not a very pious area. Like that. I remember the house we stayed in when I was a kid. It was the second oldest house in the city. You know, I mean, that was still there. You know, I'm sure there was something before, but they'd already fallen apart. But it was the second oldest in the city. And in the front yard, it had two huge trees. Like that. But across the street, yeah, all the way up across the street, to the left, no trees. To the right, then there were some trees. Like that. But somehow to the left, there were absolutely no trees. And then as you went, you know, a tree here and there. So people just didn't, so you can see as they made the house, they planted the trees. And so that was, even the backyard had all fruit trees and everything that was there, variety. So it was just the first thing you did. You went in, you built your house, you know, and you planted trees. And so, you know, so that's, yeah. So you can see, as you, how you say, you're sitting on one kind of hill and looking in the valley to the other hill. On this side there's trees, on that side there's no trees. Yeah, so therefore, those are in between. We're talking about in the village itself. So then that's what we're meaning. So. But there's all of us were before, 1,000 years ago. So.
All right. I was reading this account of one Middle Eastern adventure, like a Marco Polo type character. He was traveling through India in the 1300s and going from something like Mumbai to Coimbatore.
Not Bombay to Rajasthan. Okay. Yeah. No,
I don't know. Anyway, don't know this reference.
Huh?
Don't know this reference.
That's okay.
So, he was mentioning that the whole highway was, you know, covered with trees the whole way, and every couple of miles there was a hostel. You know, someone's house, every traveler could stay.
Yeah, wells and things like that. Well, that's the thing, public wells, anybody can take water. You weren't charged for anything. Yes, so that's the standard. Like in, I don't know now, I think there's less, but in Vrindavan it used to be many places all around the village, then there'd be these the ladies with water. They'd have a little place to sit, a huge pot of water that's, you know, in clay so it gets chilled, and then a copper pot where they'd pour water, and then you drink. Mm-hmm. And they would be sponsored. So people, that was a piety that they would sponsor these people to do that as a service. That so they, you know, so since you can't just put a well there, then at least they make water available. So the shade, the water, these are standard things. Yeah, place to stay. Yes.
More points
to
talk about also about fire space. Earlier they used to plant trees that were pious.
Yes, that's
nowadays of course trees are also
not necessarily as pious. Yeah, they plant, and generally those ones would be those monster trees that were on the road. Huge tree. Yeah, because they'll live for hundreds and hundreds of years. You know, so you do that, then, you know, it's covered nicely. You see in some old places, I remember driving some old places in the East Block, you know, before it started to get developed. You just have, it's just a highway, but there's fruit trees on both sides of the road. You know, so in season, the apple or pear or that, there's unlimited apples and pear. Anyone can stop anywhere and just pick how much you want and drive on.
Bad for business.
Huh?
Bad for business.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that was what it was like before.
Yeah.
You know, now you don't see it so much. Because when they widen the roads, they cut the trees and they don't replant.
Yeah. And how the markets make money.
Yeah. Yes. One should perform austerity to control one's desires, and one must simultaneously worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if you only control the desires and not worship Krishna, it'll make the heart hard. So it's just that you're performing austerity to control the senses by engaging them in Krishna's service. It's not that you don't you control them and don't engage them in anything. That will make the heart hard. But you control them by not doing any nonsense, but by engaging them in something that's useful to serve Krishna. That makes sense. Or if there's nothing to do to serve Krishna, you don't do anything stupid, and you remember Krishna, then the heart does not become hard. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, sometimes we're thinking, no, you know, I got to give this up, I got to this and that. But are we remembering Krishna in it? We're just thinking this is a good thing to do, and it's recommended by scriptures, and it is the practice of the devotees. But it's the practice of the devotees because then it makes it easier to remember Krishna. It's not that it itself is good on its own. For devotees. For karmis, yes, it's an improvement. For devotees, it's because you're doing that to please Krishna, remembering Krishna. Mm-hmm. So that's it. Thus, one becomes pious, and as a result, one is happy, even in material conditions of life. So, because you're doing the proper things, then Krishna gives the nice facilities. Mm-hmm. But it's coming because of devotional service. For the karmi, you do X amount, you only get X amount. The devotee performs X amount, then he gets even more. You know, X squared or something, or X to the 10th. Or, like Sudama Vipra, right? How much did one handful of chira cost? And it doesn't seem like it was that really high grade, really big, full, super thin. It was kind of like broken chip rice. You know, more emphasis on the chipped. You know, and that. And so then, how much did that cost? And then he got the opulence of Indra. So that is, how you say, chipped rice to the, you know, the millionth or billionth. Or, you know, and it's just...
But it's through the power of infinity.
Yeah, through the power of infinity. So, yeah. So that's the thing. For the karmi, he does pious activity, only gets his what he's done. That's it. Nothing more. You pay 10 rupees, you get 10 rupees of goods. Right? But if you know the shop guy, you give 10 rupees, he might give you 15, 20 rupees worth. You know, you bought some, you know, whatever it is, he gives you something more. You know, so it's based on the affection. So that's the whole thing. It's natural. So here is that therefore, material conditions in life come because of piety, not because of, you know, some technique, some knowledge. Because if that was it, wouldn't by now, after 20 years or more, 25 years, wouldn't people all be well-situated and rich? Everybody's reading and following all these success books. Wouldn't they already be well-situated? But things are just like what you hear before. Right? This term, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, is not a new saying. Right? You know, you go back in time and that's always the situation. There's the rich ones and the poor ones, or, you know, Prince and the Pauper, you know, and all these ones that the, you know, Cinderella, you know, there's the prince and then the, you know, you understand there's always this difference. So the point is that if you do the material, you'll just get that much. Devotees do more. So their situation that devotees are in, that's being controlled by the material energy. Right? You have house, you have facility, all that's controlled by that. So it's going to work by the performance of pious activities. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, because you see, in these things, it's not that the pauper playing the position of the prince behaved badly. Or the Cinderella was, you know, nasty. They were pious people. Does that make sense? And so through that, then things increase. So only through piety does material things increase. And the best piety is devotional service. Therefore, engaging what is of importance to you in Krishna's service, that's how it will increase. Right? So we perform our duties, you know, perform our occupations, this and that, because it pleases Krishna. We do it to please Krishna. That's why then it increases. Not that, okay, I have my job because I got to make money. You can think like that, but then how well will it go for you? Even if you have money, you won't be happy. But if it's being done to please Krishna, then whatever comes, you're happy. So you can see is that the residents of Vrindavan, because Krishna was, you know, the only important thing to them, and they performed all their activities in connection with Krishna, they had unlimited opulence. It means it's the most opulent place in the cosmos. Right? It makes Dwarka and Vaikuntha look like they don't have anything. But they're only thinking about Krishna. Therefore, no one notices. You know, it's just a nice decoration. You know, it's just like, let's say, you have, how do you say it, Fabergé? You know, you have those eggs that they're made, you know, very expensive. Now, most of you will take them and line, do things with them, and they're very official and all that. But Brajbasis, they'll have something like that. It looks nice, so they'll put it in a place where it'll make it look, you know, everything will come out nicely. So it's part of the scene, rather than it's all about that. In a sense, that's the difference. Vaikuntha, it's about the opulence. Therefore, it stands out. You know, you have the big gates, you have this, that. But in Braj, you'll have big gates, but there'll be trees and everything, so the gate's just part of the scene. It's not about the gate. Does that make sense? That's the difference. So they have all the opulence, but it's not about the opulence. It's about pleasing Krishna, the sweetness. So, yeah.
And we, when we, for us, it's usually all about the things.
Yes, that's.
But
that's,
it doesn't make us like Gunda Lalas.
That would be on a good day. No, we're about things because we think the things will give us pleasure. See, in Vaikuntha, they're about the things, but they think the things will give Krishna pleasure. Right? Well, in Braj, it's just about giving Krishna pleasure, so you use things. Is that?
It's just the order.
Yeah, it's the order and who's the end of it. You know, is it Krishna? Is Krishna or us? And then within us, is it us or is it extended? So we'll take the extended as better than the selfish. Like that. And then in the spiritual, it will be, you know, it'll be because it's Krishna. So it's about Krishna, that'll make it spiritual. It's about us, that makes it material. Then you have higher and lower material. Then within the spiritual, then it's about the opulence or about the sweetness. So like that, then it. So there's lots of variety within that, but that's the general principles. Sukadeva Goswami continued, having seen all these incidents in Brihadvana, Nanda Maharaj became more and more astonished, and he remembered the words spoken to him by Vasudev in Mathura. Yeah, so there's previous points, and it's what like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur pointed out, is that these difficulties just increase their love for Krishna, increase their appreciation, like that. So that's all that happens. Things go wrong, it just increases. The Pandavas, things go wrong, they just remember Krishna. So once they were out in the forest and that, and situated out there, and had worked out all how to feed all the sadhus and everything like that, then Krishna shows up. Right? Because they're always absorbed in Him. So that's the point, is that all these difficulties make them remember Krishna. If these difficulties make us forget Krishna, then that means we need to work on something. You know, if difficulties come up, we stop chanting, we don't want to associate with devotees, we won't practice sadhana, we just lay in bed all day, then there's a weakness here in our devotional understanding and practice. Right? But if the difficulties come up, we remember Krishna, we become more committed to our devotional service, then that means now, that shows that now we've come to a position of steadiness in our devotional service. Then it becomes dynamic, it advances better. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of, and the only solution is continuing devotional service. There's not something else you can do. Right? Yeah.
So Maharaj, pure devotees are always happy.
Yes, pure devotees are always happy. You can say they're always satisfied.
Satisfied, yes.
Happy is that you sometimes have happiness, sometimes distress. But the point is happiness, they remember Krishna. Distress, they remember Krishna. Mm-hmm. But materially, they're always satisfied. And then devotionally, they're always absorbed in Krishna. So that bliss, he said, they're always tasting the bliss, right?
Yes.
It did not decrease the affection, rather it increased it. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. I think it was Prabhupada who mentioned the element of bliss. Okay.
On page 31, verse 28, 29, in front of the last one.
And merged in transcendental bliss. So, in transcendental life, as soon as the devotees of the Lord merge in lamentation, they immediately experience the Lord's transcendental activities and merge in transcendental bliss. Mm-hmm. Actually, such devotees are always in transcendental bliss, and such apparent calamities provide a further impetus for that bliss. Right? And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that this is now being shown in these next verses. How the residents of Vrindavan responded, and how that was that point was being made. So they're always in transcendental bliss. Now that may be manifest through happiness or through distress, but its point is an ideal situation. They remember Krishna. Not an ideal. They remember because it's ideal. Why? Like Krishna's blessings. It's not going well because we didn't do something right, and Krishna's taking care. But he's maintaining, he's protecting, so therefore, what's the problem? there won't be any loss. Mm-hmm. Right? There may be a loss of what I consider would make me happy. Right? Yes.
Something like whether one is in happiness, one remembers Krishna, whether one is in distress, one remembers Krishna. And remembering Krishna, because Krishna is always blissful, therefore we become blissful. It's like
yes, Krishna is always blissful, so we're blissful. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. 34-37. Krishna displays the universal form within his mouth. Sukadeva Goswami continued. One day, Mother Jashoda, having taken Krishna up and placed him on her lap, was feeding him milk from her breast with maternal affection. The milk was flowing from her breast and the child was drinking it. O King Parikit, when the child Krishna was almost finished drinking his mother's milk and Mother Jashoda was touching him and looking at his beautiful, brilliantly smiling face, the baby yawned and Mother Jashoda saw in his mouth the whole sky, the higher planetary system, and the earth. The luminaries in all directions, the sun, the moon, fire, air, the seas, islands, mountains, rivers, forests, and all kinds of living entities, moving and non-moving. Footnote 12. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura signs verses 34-36 to Bhagavad Akramichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love. The unlimited dimensions of rasa, siddha prema rasa, rasa garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So this is pleasing Krishna to do this. But he's pleased at here that he's interacting with Mother Jashoda in this way, and he's pleased to perform this pastime of showing the universal form and then seeing what will be her reaction. Srila Prabhupada comments. By the arrangement of Yoga Maya, Krishna's pastimes with Mother Jashoda were all regarded as ordinary. Right? So she thought it's just this is her child, she's just feeding the child, like this. So that she doesn't think outside of that. So here was an opportunity for Krishna to show his mother that the whole universe is situated within him. In his small form, Krishna was kind enough to show his mother the Virat Roop, the universal form, so that she could enjoy seeing what kind of child she had on her lap. So that universal form that she showed Arjuna, then he's showing Mother Jashoda. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Krishna is showing the universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even while lying down on the lap of his mother, proves that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whether he is manifested as a child on the lap of his mother or as a charioteer on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Right? He's always God. He doesn't have to become God. He doesn't have to practice something or be austere or chant so much mantra or, whatever it is that people come up with these days to become God. Yes.
I heard, but I don't remember the source, that there are a few Viratrupas that Krishna showed, and this was the biggest.
But I think the next one, when at the dirt, The Brahmanda God, that's the biggest.
That he showed to Mother, he showed that was the biggest.
Yeah, but this is also, so it seems he showed two to her.
I just don't remember, there was an explanation why is the one that he showed her.
Because these are inside him. The other people, it was outside. So Arjuna, of the three that are outside, the one he showed to Arjuna is the biggest. Then Duryodhana saw, and I can't remember who was the third one he saw. He showed someone else. And so then it's there. But here, then, these are inside. So here he's showing the universal form within the universe. But I think the next one he shows the whole cosmos. So show the spiritual world, material world, everything. So, and she just kind of, what? We'll see. But point Prabhupada's making is he can do this because he's God. He doesn't have to, practice it. And he can kind of get it going. And there's a few little, electrical sparks and then he gets it working and then like that, and then his piety runs out and it disappears. No, it's not like that. When Mother Jashoda saw the whole universe within the mouth of her child, her heart began to throb, and in astonishment she wanted to close her restless eyes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, suddenly or at the same time she began trembling out of fear. She closed her eyes in order to meditate on Vishnu. oh Lord, please protect my child from this disturbance. Because it's not normal that inside your child's mouth you have the whole universal form. Right? Can you imagine how big that toothbrush would have to be? I mean, that's ridiculous. Who's not going to get afraid? It's like that. She is described as having deer-like eyes because she glanced around like a frightened deer. Right? Because deer's at restless eyes. They're always checking and everything. You know, like that. So, in this way, Krishna's display of power in killing demons did not curb the prema. Rather, the ocean of prema increased due to the appearance of anxiety. They believed Krishna was saved because of the punyas of Nanda and the Gopas, right? So that, like, before he gave 2 million cows in charity. So think, we've done all this, we've been pious, we've worshipped Lord Vishnu, and that because of that, now the child is being protected. But it's about Krishna. So karma mimamsa means it's fruitive activities about yourself. That's why many of the activities that we might define as karmis, you know, kind of like the samskaras and these kind of things. But we're doing it for Krishna, so it's not karma. It's not karma. That's the difference. That's why it gets confusing. See, in the beginning, it's just have, okay, you move in the temple, you wear certain things, you do certain things. The karmis don't do any of those things. Right? They don't wash their hands before and after eating. They're going to the toilet. They don't wear bed sheets. They don't sleep on the floor. They don't get up early. They don't go to bed early. They don't follow the four principles. They don't chant Hare Krishna. They don't worship deities. So basically, for the temple devotees, basically nothing that they do that the karmis do. So then we think that's devotional service only. But no, those are the direct activities of devotional service. But devotional service is the move that's being done to please Krishna. Because we don't know that there's smartas who do that every day and have been doing it for generations, you know, like that. And so, therefore, they're doing it, but without devotion. So, therefore, it's karma. It's not devotional. Right? Then we're out in the community. Then we think, oh, we have to do all these things to maintain. So, therefore, they can't be devotional, but they're just practical. So if you talk about, you know, why you're doing all that, this is Maya, you should just be chanting, then it's like, you know, this is not practical. And that's not what Shastra says either. Right? But the problem is both sides is Niyamagraha. One thinks, no, unless you're doing all the temple thing, then it's all Maya. The other thing is we don't have to follow all those things. So it's both is Niyamagraha. Because right? One is not understanding the rule and following it. One is not understanding the rule and not following it. So one's more pious than the other. So you can say is that person who's saying you have to do it is more pious, but their understanding of Krishna consciousness is not so much, because there's also that mix of the jnana that they don't understand that you do have to do these things to maintain family life. Yeah. So then it's just a matter of understanding that all activities are connected to Krishna. So therefore, what's recommended, that's what you're doing, and doing that to please Krishna, that's what's devotional service. But those are indirect activities. And so they are different from the direct activities of devotional service. That's why the brahmacharya will focus more on the direct, the grihastha will then be a mix of direct and indirect. Then vanaprastha, they start to put the focus back on the direct, and sannyasa means it should be prominently direct. So then the idea is that you're engaging all that, so it's all devotional service. So that's the difficulty that comes up, and that's what comes up in these things, is that the reaction of no, unless you shave up and chant 16 rounds and all that, then you can't be devotional service, it's all Maya. So then the reaction is no, don't push anybody, no, better they don't go away, and this and that. That's right. So it's not that, it's necessarily, that's, the presentation is the better method. It's a reaction to the other one. So then they push the other one as much as that the previous one is pushing. And then who is pushing it? The same guy that's telling you, oh no, don't push. You know, go back 20 years and they were the rah-rah out there and everybody's in Maya. So that's why I was saying, it's just a flip. Well, the other one is that they're chanting here. The person comes and they're chanting, yes, you know, Swamiji, we're chanting, you know, every day one round. Oh, very nice. Or so, oh, you know, okay. I did this and that, and I just couldn't, so I'm chanting 16 rounds, and this is that. Oh, that's very good. So probably I'll appreciate any of the position, as long as it's connected to Krishna. Even they're not chanting, they just come regularly and visit. You know, take prasad. Like that. You know, that drunk guy just careens into the during class and then, you know, goes into the bathroom and puts a bunch of toilet paper. He must have found it somewhere. Someone had dropped it or left it or it fell off a truck. You know, like that. As it does. So, you know, he doesn't need that. You know, it's like he could take a box. He doesn't need a box. You know, he won't use a box. He'll even forget he has a box. So therefore then he gives some to the devotees and keeps what he needs. You know, so the point is that he connects it to Krishna, so it becomes perfect. And Prabhupada's pleased. That's devotional service. You know, we could say, no, but the guy's drunk and he's a nonsense and he sleeps on the road, and you know, what kind of example does that set for the devotees? They'll all think they can get drunk and sleep on the road, you know, these kind of useless discussions. Yeah. Okay. In this case, however, Krishna displayed his Aishvarya Shakti without cause, not because of demons. Krishna simply displayed his power because he's showing his Aishvarya when the demon comes. You know, all in his siddhis and everything. But in this case, he just did it not for that. Therefore, Yashoda was surprised. She thought, what has happened to my child? Right? That was all. Her affection did not decrease from thinking Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the Supreme Lord. She did not need to find some cause for what happened. The cause of her disturbance was deep prema alone, right? Because normally children don't do that. Not every time they yawn, you see a universal form. In fact, he's been yawning all this time, right? He's over a year, he's a year old now, right? And that hasn't happened, so, you know, what's wrong? The cause of her disturbance was deep prema alone. The fixed quality of prema is continuously glorified. Right? So it didn't disturb. Now, if it's in Dorka, it won't disturb their prema, but it'll shift the flavor of their prema from that of sweetness to that of majesty. You know? And then when it gets too majestic and starts losing that relationship, then Yogamaya will cover and then they'll come back to that sweetness side again. Does that make sense? Yeah. But in Vrindavan it never happens. That's the fun. She sees, she just closes her eyes and what's wrong here? Krishna, please, you know, Vishnu, please protect my child. Thus it is described as follows. The energy of the Lord occasionally appeared to test Yashoda, but she made that energy a servant of her prema. Like that. So it just became another reason to absorb herself in Krishna. It never distracted. That's pure unalloyed devotion. Right? The other, all the rest of the spiritual is pure devotion. So it's glorious. But here is pure unalloyed devotion. Because everything is a servant of that. Srila Prabhupada adds, because of her pure maternal love, Mother Yashoda thought that this wonderful child playing so many tricks must have had some disease. She did not appreciate the wonders shown by her child. Rather, she wanted to close her eyes. She was expecting another danger, and therefore eyes became restless like those of a deer cub. Right? Because if something's like her child became heavy before, and then that cart whole scene happened, or, you know, that wasn't the cart, it means then this whole thing with the Trinavarta, like that. So something not being normal is what you expect for a human child. Then generally she thinks there's some demon, some ghost, something is making trouble. So then immediately she becomes restless and afraid. So it just increases her prema. This was all the arrangement of Yogamaya. The relationship between the Mother Yashoda and Krishna is one of pure maternal love. In that love, Mother Yashoda did not very much appreciate the display of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's opulence. Right, so we see Vasudev Devaki, it's maternal love, but it's not pure maternal love, because sometimes it also, he's the Supreme Lord, and they take that mood of servitor, which is the mood in majesty. There's servitor and shanta. So they go into that, but when that becomes, it's not in any, it's not any more favorable to the position, then Yogamaya will bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
Conclusion. Pratigya. In human society, there must be an ideal class of men, brahmanas, who can bestow blessings upon others, so that everyone will be happy. Hetu. The Brahmins, who are completely expert in chanting the Vedic hymns, are all yogis fully equipped with mystic powers. Whatever blessings they speak are certainly not, never fruitless, right? Because you need Brahmins, because by their grace, then the human society will be blessed. Why will they be able to give blessings? Because being yogis, you know, or sadhus, they're fully absorbed in their position and performance of their duties in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, their blessings don't go without results. Udaharana. Considering this, Nanda Maharaj soberly took Krishna on his lap and invited such truthful Brahmas to perform a ritualistic ceremony according to the holy hymns of the Samaveda, Rigveda, and Yajurveda. So interesting here is that then they put Sama first, because generally they say Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva. But actually, of the three, the Sama is actually the main. Because right? Krishna says, of the four, he's these three. That's why many times you see they only mention these three. They don't mention Atharva. But if they're all four, they'll say they chant from the Veda. So it'll be any of these. The priests chant from that, so depending on the Veda, they'll chant. But if they're being more specific, they're not here, but they're giving these three, because these are the main. But of these three, Sama's the main. So this is interesting. So Rig's considered senior to Yajur. So that's there, but Sama's actually senior to Rig. Right? Sometimes the Karma Mimamsas, those who are really Karmis and all that, they'll consider Sama lower, because Sama then is when it's chanted for death rites in that. And so then they'll consider it kind of less, you know, because the rule in Manu is that if you hear the Samaveda being chanted, all other Vedas stop chanting. So the consideration of the Karmis is that it's inauspicious because of the death rites and those things. So that's why we stop. But actually it's because it's senior, therefore why would the junior ones chant while the senior one is present? Does that make sense? That's actually what it is.
It's considered in Bhagavatam that the clapping of Garuda's wings is a Samaveda.
Yes.
And Garuda Purana must be chanted when someone dies at home. So is that the relation between Samaveda?
Could be. But here, no. We have to work on this.
See,
you may be. You have to have your own little mic and stuff. That Garuda's wings are the flapping Garuda's wings, the sound from that is the Samaveda. And it's also said at the death rites that then the Garuda Purana should be recited. And so is there some correlation there? One is that, yes, there is. The other thing is when you start on a journey, then if you remember the great birds and the Vanaras, right? So in other words, you remember Garuda and Hanuman before travels, then it'll be auspicious. So someone at the death rites means they're traveling to another position. Right? And so then that's going to be, then by remembering Garuda or reading from Garuda Purana, then you get that aspect. So, but there could be that connection also because of the Samaveda and his wings and all that. So, okay. Nanda Maharaj was very confident about the qualifications of the Brahmins and their blessings. He was fully confident that simply if the good Brahmins showered their blessings, the child Krishna would be happy. So that's supporting the pratigyas that they can do. And so here's the example of Nanda Maharaj doing that, having that faith.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada Ki.